We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Bam, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Happy hump day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. I'm your host, Alex Golden. Joining me today is Michael J. Fauci for another episode of your favorite pod. Fauci, how's it going?
Life's good. No complaints over here. And, Alex, we got something a little bit different today. So tell them what we got going on.
Yeah, so we are actually recording this on Sunday. It is St. Patrick's Day. So hope you guys enjoyed your St. Patrick's Day and got to celebrate that Pacers win against the Nets. And hopefully, if you're listening to this, they beat the Cavaliers too. But we do not know because we cannot predict the future. It is 317, though, so it is Indianapolis Day here on the podcast. But no, we thought about talking a little bit deeper about this team and looking at three questions that I think are pretty important to how this team currently is and what it looks like for the rest of the season. So the first question, Fauci, we're going to start off with, and I want to just take our time kind of discussing this, is how should the Pacers handle McDermott's minutes when he returns from injury?
Sounds rough to say, but I don't know if there should be minutes for Doug McDermott upon coming back. And here's the thing. Look, while brief, the one thing that Doug showed in his time, his second stint as an Indiana Pacer in the six games, is that he's far from the Doug McDermott that we knew from the past. He's not that same guy. I know that when Doug McDermott came over to Indiana at the trade deadline, he was still shooting a very good three-point percentage with San Antonio, but that's also a team that's at the bottom of the standings, and I felt that we have not seen that. To break that down a little bit further, Alex, in the six games with the Pacers, he's 7 of 24 from the field. That's good for 29%, and even worse from three-point land. He's 4 of 20 from three. He actually has as many fouls as rebounds and just one more assist than fouls. Wow. So, you know, I could keep going because I do have some other notes that I put together, you know, but you tell me if you want to chime in here or you want me to continue.
Well, I can chime in here a little bit. I think it's interesting because McDermott's played in six games, you know, since he's gotten here. And I looked this up after the Pacers lost to the Bulls, so I don't have my stats up from what Jairus Walker did against the Nets, so I won't talk about him yet. But McDermott in his first six games, Fauci, had an offensive rating of 112.6, a defensive rating of 116.2 and a net rating of -3.6. So the team was not very good when he was out there. And if you watched it, you don't even need the numbers to show you. It felt bad. He was only playing 10.9 minutes a game since being traded. And you can kind of see, like, okay, he had a few games where he maybe made a few buckets, but it just really did not feel like a vintage Doug McDermott. No. And so I just feel like we saw such a defensive liability with him out there. It's someone that you can attack, you know, at will. But if you've got a guy like Jairus Walker out there, who he did not play great against the Nets. I think he was 0-5 from the field, 0-3 from three, only played in the first half, which was a bit of a bummer. But other than that, like the first four games that he, or the last four games before this game against the Nets, he had an offensive rating of 126.0 and a defensive rating of 113.3, which gave him a net rating of 12.6 in 12.3 minutes per game. So getting more of an opportunity than McDermott was by playing about, you know, a minute and a half more than him, and also just being more efficient defensively and offensively. So I just feel like you can't really attack Jairus Walker every single possession. Like, you can't hunt him if you're looking to try to score on somebody because he's got defensive capabilities. But I feel like with Doug McDermott, it makes it so much easier to attack the Pacers defensively and kind of makes this team a little bit weaker on that side of the basketball where they're already not very strong. So I agree with you. I don't necessarily think there should be a role for McDermott. He does spread the floor, but that to me is just not that important with how this team is currently built.
Yeah, and it's like maybe if McDermott was knocking down those threes, you know, in the six games, you could say, okay, hey, you know what? What he brings to the table is essential. And look, he is, for his career, a very good three-point shooter. But for right now, the Pacers, they need more help defensively. And I think they were starting to see the Pacers team come together defensively, you know, compared to where they were before. And look, McDermott is not to blame for our defensive issues. The Pacers have bigger problems than that. But I'm surprised when you mentioned those numbers. I actually thought they were worse. I really did. So it's surprising to hear that he's only about like a negative, you know, four, you know, as it relates to, you know, offensive rating and defensive rating. But, you know, this Pacers team, since he's been gone defensively, they're giving up 114.7 points per game in the games that he's missed. That is about 10 points per game lower than where they were at their all-time worst on the season. So we're seeing a Pacers team that is improving defensively, and I feel that if you are to throw McDermott out there for, you know, even 10 minutes a night, there's no reason to believe that the Pacers are not going to be worse defensively. So I do think as it relates to those minutes, I think they should continue to be split between Ben Sheppard and Jairus Walker. I think that we've seen a lot of those minutes go to Ben Sheppard. Obviously, with Benedict Mathurin out, we're seeing an uptick on that, but you know, just to highlight that on Ben Sheppard, who is getting a lot of those minutes. In the seven games that Ben Sheppard has played since Doug McDermott went down against Toronto, Sheppard's averaging 20 minutes per game.
Yeah.
And the Pacers are 5-2 during that span when he's played. So I think that right now, I mean, even last, you know, a couple episodes ago, we were raving about, you know, Ben Sheppard and how everybody's talking about what he brings defensively. I think the Pacers would be taking a solid hit if those minutes were to go back to McDermott.
So the Pacers have only lost two games since McDermott went down with the injury?
Well, Ben Sheppard missed some games
that's right.
At one point, so yeah.
Okay. I was trying to figure that out. Sorry, I can't. What games did he miss? Which ones were those? Do you remember?
Well, it was, I have to pull it up right now.
Oh, but he was out. That's right. He didn't go on the road trip to New Orleans.
Exactly.
He joined the team in Dallas. He didn't play in San Antonio, did he?
He did not play.
Okay, so those were the two games that we lost that he did not play. Well, that makes sense, you know. I remember that was a talking point. No, that's a good point. Because McDermott, in the first six games, they were 4-2. They beat the Knicks. They lost to the Hornets, beat the Raptors on the road, beat the Pistons, beat the Mavericks, and then lost to the Raptors. So, you know, not the stiffest competition there for McDermott in those wins, because we saw, like, that Knicks team was pretty depleted that Indiana beat 125-111. Anytime you beat the Pistons, I mean, I don't think anybody feels good about that. The Raptors on the road, they barely won that game. And the Mavericks, we just had the Mavericks number this year. Like, that's the only team we've been able to make threes on, really, since the All-Star break. The Pacers have really struggled from outside. That's been, like, the only team to do that against. So, you know, and they had a crazy game winner Sunday, Fletch. I don't know if you saw Kyrie Irving's game winner.
That was honestly crazy. Kyrie's shot looks like something like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would have chucked that back in like the 80s, you know. So, I mean, I did not think that that one had a good shot of going in, but Kyrie's a special player, and I think that special players make special plays, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, so anyway, back to Doug. I mean, it's just interesting because he's got experience, he's a veteran, he knows what it takes to play the right way in this league and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I just don't feel like I can trust him defensively enough to make the case that he should be getting minutes over some of our rookies that are going to be a part of this team long term. I mean, McDermott at this point, I don't really see a scenario where he is brought back in the offseason unless it's in some kind of sign and trade type thing where they're whatever, but I don't even know what his value is going to be. There's no way he's getting paid what San Antonio paid him when the Pacers completed that first sign and trade a couple of years ago. So, you know, I think he's making around $14 million right now. Like, he'll be lucky to get close to 10, I think, based on where he's at in his career. So I think you just kind of ride it out and continue to let Jairus Walker get minutes as the 10th guy and see what he does. And he played really good against Chicago. So you can kind of justify like, okay, we'll leave him out there for more minutes. But if he struggles like he did against Brooklyn, well, you just don't play him in the second half. And I think that's fair. And it's not really rude or anything. It's not like disrespectful to not play him more minutes, but he's got to earn those minutes. And if he doesn't, then okay, you had your chance in the first half. We're going to cut the rotation down to 9, but I just don't see a scenario where it makes any sense for McDermott to kind of take minutes away from Jairus or Shep.
I can't. I just think it didn't take that long to see early on that it was like, ah, McDermott doesn't have it like he used to. And I think that was very evident early on that the Pacers tried when they moved on from Buddy. They tried to be able to do something to address 3-point shooting, and it just wasn't there. And hopefully McDermott could get healthy. I think that this is a luxury that the Pacers don't really need him right now because they don't have to force him back. So let's bring him back when he's like 120%, if that's even possible, compared to him being 90%. Because I think that right now the Pacers, those minutes should go and deserve to go to a guy like Ben Shepherd and or Jairus Walker being able to collect some minutes so you can continue to develop him instead of knowing that, hey, like you said, Doug McDermott will not be here in the future moving forward.
Yeah, let's move on to our next question because I think we're both in agreement there that McDermott probably not crack the rotation right now unless there is a kind of a break the glass in case of emergency type thing. Mm-hmm. So
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Question number 2. In what ways has Benedict Mathurin's injury helped slash hurt the rotation?
As it relates to helped, I'd say I feel like at times we've been able to see kind of Siakam be more of that anchor of the second unit compared to Mathurin kind of leading that group and being the focal point. And I think that the Pacers have had success with that group. So I think that that's one reason. I think another is also that this has really enabled Ben Shepherd to be able to get that playing time and really be able to grow. We talked about it over those last 7 games or so. He's averaging 20 minutes per game, which is a really good sample size. And you can see he's bringing it on the defensive end. And that's, I got to say, part of the reason why the Pacers have been an improved defensive team over the last, you know, handful of games. Because like you could even say, okay, offensively, a little bit inconsistent. But Alex, for the record, Ben Shepherd was plus 18 against the Bulls, the highest on the team. And he went 0-5 from the field. They only had 2 points. So you could just see that this man's playing some winning basketball, and it's making a big difference. Now, I did have one more reason for help.
Okay, let's give you that stay on the positive. Transition? Let's keep on the positive. We'll come back to the negative here in a second.
That's what I'm thinking over here. During the last 5 games since Benedict Mathurin has been out, I also feel that we've seen TJ McConnell take on a bigger role offensively. He's actually averaging 12.2 points per game on 50% shooting, and he's actually seen an uptick to 10.4 field goals attempts per game and nearly two steals per game. So we're seeing McConnell actually playing some of his best basketball all season when the Pacers needed somebody to step up.
Yeah, I would say McConnell's was more out of a necessity because they need someone else to kind of help score the basketball. Because when you look at this Pacers team, there's not a lot of great isolation scorers. So, you know, it allows McConnell to kind of be more of an isolation scorer. But I do like how they've done a good job staggering the minutes of Tyrese Haliburton and Pascal Siakam to make sure that at least one of them is always out there on the court at all times. But because of some of the injury, or excuse me, some of the foul trouble they got into, that did kind of change things up a little bit in that Nets game on Saturday night. But I really have enjoyed seeing the opportunity that this has presented for guys like Ben Shepherd and Jairus Walker, because Jairus Walker probably would not have cracked the rotation had you know, Mathurin not gone down with this injury. So that's a big opportunity for Jairus, because I know fans have been, you know, begging Rick Carlisle to give him an opportunity, and he really hasn't been given that opportunity on a consistent level. But it's been five games in a row now that he's at least got into the rotation early on in the game. Whether he's continued that into the second half, it's been kind of hit or miss, but you're still seeing how this has presented that great opportunity for him. But like, yeah, I think that it does kind of create a narrative for Siakam to be more of an aggressive scorer, because with the first unit, like, he kind of has to fill that out, because there's been times in the first unit, like, you'll see Haliburton and Turner kind of attack a teams with that pick and roll game that they have, that pick and pop game. And Siakam doesn't really touch the basketball, but with that second unit now, with him kind of being the focal point, with him having more of an emphasis on being that scorer, it does allow for him to kind of maybe get loose and start to kind of get a feel for what he can do, what he can't do. I loved his aggressiveness against the Nets. I felt like he was actively looking for a shot. And there was like a point there where he had missed like three or four in a row, and it was just like, man, this is not a good percentage from him. But I like that he's being aggressive at attacking. And then like he comes down the court the next leg, you know, three or four plays, and he scores on two or three baskets. So it's like that's what you want to see. And I think that this team is best when you're seeing Siakam kind of help carry the load, especially without Haliburton. And Haliburton really has kind of had to step up a little bit more too, because if you look in the first quarter, a lot of times you'll see him kind of finishing quarters out with that second unit without Siakam on the court. So I just feel like it's given those guys more maybe of a green light. But I think there are definitely some concerns with not having him. But one thing I will say that I forgot to mention is just the clarity that it gives in terms of the rotation. I think that's that true. It just allows guys to kind of know what their role is going to be, and there's not like anybody looking down to see if, oh, am I going to get benched for this guy? I feel like, no, it's pretty much like, okay, this is our team. We can't really have a quick trigger on anybody if they're struggling. Like, let guys play through their struggles a little bit more so they can kind of get over the hump a little bit and just kind of know what their role is going to be on a night-to-night basis. And I think that does help with the consistency of this team.
I think it does, because earlier on, I mean, the Pacers had – at this point, so many more guards. I mean, between, you know, Mathurin and Buddy and Bruce Brown, you know, it's just like there's just so many mouths to feed that McConnell was someone that was in and out of the lineup. You never knew if he was going to get in or not. And I feel like Ben Shepherd might get a couple of minutes. Now, Ben Shepherd's got to be ready every single night. I know McConnell stays ready, but I feel like that confidence that's pumped into a rookie, knowing that it's like, hey, you're not just playing tonight, you're probably going to play about 20 minutes, is you better be ready. And I think that he has. I think that, yeah, role defining has absolutely happened. And I feel that now you feel that Jairus Walker is going to be making an appearance on the court, you know, more likely than not. So I think that he's also someone who's going to be a little bit more ready compared to getting his number called at a random time when he hadn't played in X amount of games. So I think that's great to see.
Let's go to the negative side now of things. And I think I talked about this after the Mathurin news broke, and I think that it's very telling. It's the margin for error is slim. And without Mathurin, it makes things a little more difficult, because I was a little bit worried when Siakam got into early foul trouble against the Nets. And I keep going back to that, because had he not came in and provided that scoring punch for that second unit, you know, playing with that group, it could have gotten really ugly and the Nets could have got out to a double-digit lead. And it just makes it so much more difficult not having a guy out there that can really put the ball in the basket at ease. So, yeah, it is good that Siakam is getting more of an opportunity, but that also allows him to maybe get in more foul trouble, or, you know, put more miles on his body in the regular season, where maybe you're wanting him to only play about you know, 30 to 31 minutes, he might have to play close to 36 now because he's having to carry more of a load out there. So I just think that it makes the margin for error very, very slim. That's my biggest concern, I would say, without Mathurin. And my other one, obviously, just like not having someone out there that can really just score in isolation. They don't have a lot of great isolations, of course, probably outside of Siakam. Haliburton can do it at times. McConnell, I think he's pretty good in isolation in terms of like creating his own, but like he still has to kind of finagle his way to do that. I think Mathurin's just so much more of a gifted scorer that can get to the free throw line, that can attack the rim and put pressure on defenses. And I think they just really miss that element of the game.
And that was going to be my next one. It's just like, we don't have that guy who really attacks the rim the way that Mathurin does. I mean, we saw as a rookie, he was getting the free throw line at a complete veteran, you know, type of rate. And I think that right now, you know, when he goes down, I mean, you're not getting that at a Ben Shepherd. You're not. You're not getting that out of Jarris Walker right now. It's just different. Those are guys that might be far more likely to settle for threes or settle for jump shots compared to, you know, a Ben Mathurin. But, you know, just a simple thing is like, where will the bench scoring come from on any given night? It feels like it's like a game of hot potato or musical chairs. Like, you really don't know whose night it's going to be. It all of a sudden puts that pressure on a guy like Obi Toppin or Ben Shepherd to be like, hey, we need to get double digits out of you. And I feel that those are players that, you know, while Obi might be able to do that on a little bit more of a consistent basis, we talked about, hey, the Pacers are 5-0 when Ben Shepherd scores in double figures. That's great, but it's only happened 5 times. A guy like Ben Mathurin, you're expecting 15 or more out of, and on any given night, he could give you 20 or more. I feel like the Pacers don't have that guy off the bench to really say, okay, he could have a random game where he could go off and give you 30. I mean, it's just they just don't have that type of player. And now when the playoff time approaches and you're going with a shortened rotation, you're now looking at, say, a TJ McConnell, Obi Toppin, Jalen Smith, and Ben Shepherd being most likely the four that are coming off the bench. And I feel like it's a little bit inconsistent scoring-wise as to who's going to bring it come playoff time. I know Mathurin's never played in the playoffs before, but he's got that dog in him that you just feel like, okay, hey, something tells me when it matters most, like you're going to be able to get at least one or two games where Mathurin might give you between 15 to 20, you know, in a playoff series. And right now it's just like, are some of these players potentially going to get played off of the court, or could the moment be too big for them? That's very possible.
Yeah, it would just be great experience too for Mathurin to get out there in the playoffs.
Fantastic and kind of experience.
You know, and just figure things out, because you mentioned, like, we saw him in the in-season tournament against the Lakers really step up his game and really just relish with that competition. He was talking a lot of trash with Boston when they were in Indiana in that game going to Vegas, the determination of who would make it to Vegas. And I thought he was pretty good in that game, hit some big-time shots. So you're just going to miss a big-time Mathurin kind of really showcasing what he can do. But obviously it's just, it's tough because they miss that element of it. I do think that there are some pros and cons to it, because I think this team, honestly, I hate to say it like this, but I think they might've gotten better defensively.
I know, me too.
Without Mathurin, because he does so many good things offensively that you want to keep him out there longer, but he's just not as consistent defensively as a Ben Shepherd. And I hate to say that. I mean, Ben Shepherd, I think, is actually older than Mathurin.
Oh, yeah. Maybe,
yeah, I think he is. So the age thing doesn't matter to me as much, but like just the overall experience. But you can already just see how much more advanced Shepherd is defensively than Mathurin is as a player. We've seen some really good defensive moments from Mathurin, but it's just not been consistent where Shepherd has been consistent. So I think kind of going back and forth there, you can kind of see where, like, okay, more Shepherd minutes means that the defense is going to get better. And so you don't really think about it in that terms all the time, but I just feel like now with Nesmith and Nembhard starting, there are probably times when you maybe would rather have Mathurin out there over a guy like Andrew Nembhard if he's not playing, you know, great basketball. Like against the Bulls, maybe if you have Mathurin out there instead of Nembhard to kind of be more of an offensive threat, that could have helped the Pacers score there at the end of the game instead of Nembhard taking some very questionable long threes when the game was kind of in the balance. So you just never know like where they could have utilized him correctly, but it does feel like he is a great player that's, you know, just growing into his own, and he was starting to kind of get things figured out. And the injury to me, like the biggest thing that I hate, it doesn't really even impact this year, but it kind of impacts how does this, you know, momentum wise impact Mathurin going into next season, and how much of a timetable will it take for him to get back to who he once was. And I think that's something to keep an eye on, which is very concerning to me.
That really is, because what if this team does have success without Mathurin? That all of a sudden has them looking at things a little bit differently, you know? So, and I also think that then that puts a lot of pressure on next year to be kind of like a make or not say a make or break year, but it's like, okay, are you going to, is he looked at to be a potential star on this team or more of just, hey, he's a pretty good player on a team that's already paying two max contracts potentially. And then also having to make some other decisions on other players. So I think there was someone, you know, you always get both sides of it. Someone was like, I think the Pacers are going to be better, you know, without Mathurin, you know, this is a good problem. It's like, it's never a good problem. Like you want your players out there because this experience for him would have been so vital to be able to be like, hey, look, now he's in the playoffs. He knows what he needs to work on. Now it's just like, hopefully he can, you know, learn a lot on the sidelines watching. And sometimes we hear that from other players, how much that they've learned. I know it's a little bit different, but like a Chet Holmgren missed his whole rookie year. That man definitely learned a lot on the sideline and did not look anything like a rookie this year. So hopefully Mathurin's able to learn some stuff just watching. But you definitely wish that you had him out there, because there's going to be times where you're going to need that big offensive, you know, capability that could come at any given time. But short term right now, yeah, the Pacers, you can't lie, they do look better defensively.
Yeah, that competitor in Mathurin, I'm sure when the Pacers are in the play-in or the playoffs, if he's there sitting on the sideline, he is going to be chomping at the bit to get back into the fold of things. And so that's going to be interesting to see. But Fauci, let's move on to our last question and our last topic of today's podcast. This question, I think, is a very interesting one, because there's a lot of ways we can go with this. But what one area would you most like to see the Pacers improve on the final 15 games of the season?
So I think that the easy thing to say is prove the defense. I think everybody's been saying that all year, but I'm going to be a little bit more specific. I think that I'm going to say the rebounding.
Because yeah, I figured you'd go rebounding.
I'm a stickler for rebounding. I mean, you know, truly, I look forward to coaching my kids in basketball and just really teaching them how to box out. You know, look,
are you a coach?
My size, how many rebounds was I going to grab? But they're going to learn how to rebound. All right.
Are you a coach?
I coached rec basketball for a couple years, but okay. I cannot wait to coach my kids in sports. Not a soccer guy, but when it comes to like basketball, baseball, you know, football, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm not a soccer guy either. Sorry, John Crabtree, if you're listening to this, but we're not soccer guys here. There's not going to be any kicking, you know, the corner kick over here on Setting the Pace. We're not talking any soccer, but basketball, rec league, I like it.
Absolutely. So, look, this is a Pacers team that's 0.8 of a rebound away from being last in the NBA in rebounds per game. The effort just isn't always there. We see it come and go, and I feel like here's the thing. We would love to be able to rely on Siakam and Turner to be double-digit rebounders, but we just can't. This needs to be a collective effort. So I crunched some numbers, and I mean, I really got that shovel on me, and I went digging. And here's what we got. This team is 10-4 when Turner has a double-double. We've discussed that. 5-1 when Siakam has double-digit rebounds. Great. Look at this. 13-4 when Jalen Smith has 7 or more rebounds.
Wow.
Then you ready for this? 8-0 when Tyrese Halliburton has 7 rebounds or more. Now, how realistic is that? It's 7 rebounds. That's a lot. Well, they're 12-3 when he has 6 rebounds. So it just shows that, like, even at times, we've seen Aaron Nesmith have stretches of the season where he was pulling down rebounds. I just feel that sometimes, look, it's that rebounding effort. We've seen the Pacers have, you know, 4 or more guys with 6 rebounds. That's what it's going to take for this team to get a little bit better. So that's my main one. And then I have, you know, like an honorable mention, but I want to wait to hear yours.
Yeah, so I'm going to probably surprise some people here with mine, and it maybe feels a little bit more recency bias, but if you look up the numbers, it really isn't recency bias. It's actually just how bad they've been. I said 3-point percentage because
it fell off a cliff.
Fauci, I'm going to tell you something here. I think I'm going to look this up.
I'm scared.
Before the trade deadline, or excuse me, before the All-Star break, Indiana was 6th in 3-point percentage. They were, 12th in three-pointers attempted and 9th in three-pointers made. not bad. Since they've returned from the All-Star break, they are 27th in three-pointers made, 24th in three-pointers attempted, and 27th in three-point percentage at 33.8%. They've been atrocious from outside, and that was a huge part of what this team did so well to get them to where they are. So I understand they're evolving as a team, and they're trying to become more defensive-minded, like you said, be a better rebounding team. All that's good, but they have been struggling so bad from outside. It's really, you know, exhausting to kind of see them shoot. There's been several games where we've seen 6 of 20, you know, 7 of 25. Oh, yeah. Like, it's just been very low percentages. And you're getting kind of like to this point where you're like, okay, why are we settling for so many threes? Like, get in the paint, because you clearly are not hitting your shots. And I think that does kind of play a factor into no Buddy Hield, which I know everybody gets so upset about this. When you talk about Buddy Hield, like, everyone talks about him being like a superstar. No. He just really spread the floor well. You get rid of Bruce Brown, who was a good three-point shooter, and Jordan Moore was also a good three-point shooter. You pretty much just cashed in all your good three-point shooting for Pascal Siakam and Doug McDermott, who's been a non-factor. So it really does kind of show you, like, how this team needs to continue to grow. But, like, Nimhard's not a good three-point shooter. Like, he's very average. Aaron Nesmith's a good three-point shooter. But I think the main one here, obviously, and I think it's the biggest elephant in the room, is Tyrese Haliburton. Once he can finally open back up and become that dynamic player that he was in October, November, like, if he can get to that point before the playoffs, like, okay, watch out, because this team's going to be special. But he has not looked anywhere close to what he looked like back at the beginning of the season. Like, even in January, there was times when he was skipping around doing different things. Like, he's just not been that player. So if he can, like, kind of just, like, unlock the floodgates and just start drilling threes again at a high clip, like, it's going to feel a lot better. But right now, with him struggling, with Nimhard not being the greatest three-point shooter, you know, you're seeing almost, it feels like, a better three-point percentage from T.J. McConnell than Tyrese Haliburton of late, and that's not a good sign.
That's scary, but it's true. I mean, Haliburton shooting 17.9% from three this month. Anyone else that you saw that on would be labeled an atrocious shooter, and you obviously know Haliburton's been a really good three-point shooter for his career. Last year, he became the first player ever to average 20 points per game, 10 assists, and shoot 40% from three. So it's just, we need some of that back. I feel that he will get back into a rhythm at some point. But I think that's a great area of improvement for you to mention, because it's weird, because the Pacers still lead the NBA in overall field goal percentage at just over 50.5%. So it's weird to see just how far they've fallen from three-point land. But yeah, I mean, that used to be kind of one of our calling cards at the beginning of the year. My honorable mention was just, don't overlook the teams that that you view as inferior. The Pacers have so many 10 or more plus, comebacks this year, but they shouldn't have to have that many of them. They dig themselves in holes early on, obviously, with time ticking down in the playoffs roughly about a month from today. You know, I think the Pacers, every team that they play is going to be a really good team. So I think that they just got to be ready to play. Maybe that's something that works in their favor, that there are no teams to be able to overlook, you know, down the stretch. But I do think that the way the seeding is right now, you got to be able to handle business. So I think if I could pick one, I'm saying rebounding. I think I love yours as a three-point percentage. And then other than that, I mean, there's a few different areas, but I think those are two good ones.
Yeah, rebounding and three-point shooting, if they can get that improved, that would be great. You know, they're just a team that continues to figure things out. But I was surprised. It's changed a little bit since I think the last couple of games. But Indiana's eighth right now in personal fouls drawn since returning from the All-Star break.
Since when? Oh, wow. I mean, that's very surprising, because this is a
18.5.
Was not drawing contact. So that is good to see. Hopefully the league got the memo, because I feel that it was crazy how the Pacers just were not getting any whistles at all through at least the first half of the season.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how this team kind of figures things out down the stretch. They're starting to get a little bit more synergy with one another. Everyone's kind of understanding who they're playing with and what they do well, what they don't do well, and trying to attack the areas of weaknesses for these teams. But we'll see. They've got a tough schedule remaining. They got some pivotal games coming up here. They start this 5-game road trip as we're recording this against Detroit. Then they go out to California, play 3 games, and then hit Chicago up on the way home. So it's not going to be easy, but you got 5 games and I think 8 days, Facci. So they're just going to have to take care of business here and really try to find a way to keep fighting off the Miami Heat and the Philadelphia 76ers, who are just right behind them, right in lockstep with them for that sixth spot in the Eastern Conference. I mean, it's going to be tough, but I feel really pretty solid about Indiana just staying at six. I feel like that'd be the best spot for them. I don't think they wanted to see any part of New York or Orlando in the first round. And if they could somehow get matched up with Cleveland in a 3-6 matchup, I know Cleveland's tough, and I don't know if I would put Indiana as the favorite to win that series, but I think that I like that matchup a little bit more than seeing us go up against some teams that we've struggled with this year. Even though I know we won the series against New York, we haven't seen them with OG and fully healthy, and we obviously saw how Orlando has been problematic with their size. I think that'd be a tougher series than maybe people give it credit for.
Yeah, I mean, look, that could be a very tough series. The one thing that you potentially have in your favor is Orlando also has not been there.
Yeah, inexperience.
So I think a lot of inexperience there, a lot of inexperience on this Pacers team as well. So I think that there's just not a really good matchup, no. You know, in the playoffs right now. If you look at the Bucks hung 140 points on the Suns the other night without Giannis. So yeah. I feel that even though we had success against Milwaukee, you get a feeling that it would be a little bit of a different Milwaukee team that you'd run into. So I don't know where the Pacers are going to end up, but you want to avoid the play-in at all means. And I think that if the Pacers can just hold down that sixth spot, it would be a major win on the season for a team that you hoped, hey, could they just be really in the mix? Could they be in the play-in? You know, we've been spoiled for quite some time now, and I know the Pacers are aiming for fourth. It's still a potential, but that road trip that you mentioned, you know, five games, eight nights, you know, being on the road, it's going to be tough. That could be a kind of like a season defining stretch at this point.
Yeah, and you got some teams that really need to win some games there with the Warriors, with the Lakers, with the Clippers, and obviously Chicago on the way back home from that road trip.
That was giving us a lot of trouble for a team that's below us in the standings. So
yeah,
you can't look at that as an easy game. And I already talked about, you know, recently how Detroit is actually playing. So there was a time where Detroit didn't win a game in a month. Recently, they just won 3 out of 4. So yeah. I think that this is a Detroit team that is they have something to play for. Those players are so young, they're not looking to tank. They're going to give you their best effort, and I think the Pacers can't overlook Detroit.
No, I mean, on Sunday we saw Bam Adebayo hit a game-winning three with the game tied 1-1. And, you know, you can kind of be frustrated with Cade Cunningham because he took a jumper with 10 seconds left in the shot clock. And instead of just holding on to the ball and taking a last-second shot, but gave Miami a chance to come down and get a shot, and Bam Adebayo was the trailer, and he drilled a three, and the game was over. And it's like, that could have been a big one because we already saw Miami lose to a team like Washington too this year. So just recently, I think it was last Sunday. So you just never know what's going to happen. But I'm excited to see what this team does, and there's a lot of areas to improve upon and so many different things that we've talked about in this episode already. But thank you all so much for listening. Flashy, tell everybody where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPod, STP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPodSTP. You can find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok at Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, go to youtube.com/Setting the Pace, a Pacers podcast, where you can find our newly rebranded YouTube page where we've got all new thumbnails, a lot of new graphics. I think you guys are going to enjoy that quite a bit. A lot cleaner looking and just a better experience overall for everybody there in terms of the aesthetics of how it looks. But make sure you guys hit that subscribe button and like all the videos that you're watching over there to make sure everybody knows about this show. And if you haven't already, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. I saw that we did get another rating and review over the weekend, so thank you everybody for that. But if you have not done that already, please, it does help with the show. And like I mentioned on the recap episode at the beginning of the Nets Pacers recap, if you're listening to this episode and you're skipping through those advertisements, please do us a big solid and help us out by just not pushing the fast forward button. But if you want to get through them quicker, push the 2X button. That way you're still listening to them. And every listen to those advertisements helps this show grow financially. And we really appreciate that donation from you guys by already giving us so much of your time by listening to this episode. But Flachi, if you're looking forward to this 5-game road trip and hoping the Pacers can kind of make a statement win here in some key games, and hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers!